Attention Austin guitarists, are you in need of setup or repair on your acoustic or electric axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years. Not only is he the best guy in town, he's got the best prices and the fastest service in town. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Whether it's acoustic or electric, Jason Swedberg is the guy for you. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Boom, we're back at it. Three shows this week. Yes, this is a surprise show being dropped on you out of nowhere. Three shows this week. I got a lot of feedback on Friday's show with Alex Marrero from Brownout, Brown Sabbath, Sly Curtis, who I'm actually going to go see in a little while, who they play like once a month at the 1-to-1 bar, and it's a big 13-piece band that only plays Sly and the Family Stone and Curtis Mayfield songs. Yeah, hello. That's where I'm going to be tonight. That's where I'm going to be tonight, okay? I'm going to get there, and I'm going to do it. All right, guys. I want to thank you guys for the feedback on the Alex show. People really enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with March and Beauty. If you don't know those guys, go back there and listen to that. Great conversation. Great band. All right? I hope you guys are all having a great week. I've been having a great week, man. I've been busy. Been doing a lot of Austin Music Foundation stuff. Been doing a lot of podcasts. Man, I've talked to a lot of people this week. I talked to Sydney Wright. I talked to Alicia Lani. I talked to this band called 5800 from Miami, Florida, this rock band, a modern rock band, featuring Phil Collins' son, Nick Collins, on drums. He's out on tour with his dad all the time playing drums. 17 years old playing with his dad. You'll be hearing that coming in the coming days. We did that via Skype. They're in Miami. And they're actually, I'm going to Miami in a couple weeks. And they're playing 2 days after I leave. So I'm not going to get to see them or meet them in person yet. I guess I will someday. But you'll hear this conversation with me and 5800. Great band. It's all written out in words there. Great conversation with Sydney Wright. Of course, if you live in Austin and you're on the social media and you know stuff about music, you know Sydney was hit by a car when she was riding one of those extremely idiotic. I'm sorry. They are. They're stupid. Those scooters. There's too many of them. They're riding in the street. They're getting in traffic. If you live in Austin, you understand what I'm talking about. If you ride one, I'm sorry. It really annoys the hell out of me. Great conversation with her. And of course, Alicia Lani, whose new album Resilient is out. Get out there and check that out. Boy, she's a firecracker, man. We've been working with her in the artist development program over at Austin Music Foundation. So earlier today, I went and did this meeting for a while. We did this class with this great dude, Louis Carr, who manages bands here in town. And then we came over and did the podcast. So yeah, it's been a busy week so far. And it's only Tuesday for me. I'm doing this the day before it drops. But I have an incredible show for you guys today. My friend Ty Herless from the Tom Petty tribute band, The Damn Torpedoes, is my guest on the show today. If you've not seen The Damn Torpedoes, you should go see them. They're incredible. They're very good. Go look them up right now, thedamntorpedoes.com. Amazing band. If you live in Austin, they're playing this Friday, November 30th, at Empire Control Room and Garage. Go out there and check it out. That's going to be a great venue to see them. I've never seen them there. Unfortunately, I'll be in Houston playing a show with Skyrocket. But if you live in Austin, get out on Friday, November 30th to the Empire Control Room. If you're a Tom Petty fan, these guys do it right. And Ty and I have a great conversation about everything. He was in other bands before the Damn Torpedoes, bunch of different kind of bands, Parade. He was in the Brad Dunn band. We have a great conversation about his journey from Ohio to Austin. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with my friend Ty Herless from the Damn Torpedoes. Let's get down.
She
boxes of CDs in my closet, and when I made this last EP, the publicist was like, "Hey man, you gotta make some CDs," and I'm like, "Why?" It's like, "Cause radio won't play it and people won't review it." I'm like, "Give me a fucking break!" Like, but it's true. Some people mm-hmm. won't. But like, I yeah. tested it. I mean, I don't want to sound like a jerk, but I did. I mean, I did like one of the radio stations in town that had me on their station. That is awesome, and I love it. I'm not talking shit about the station, but the main dude from the station is like, "Hey man, you gotta get me that. You gotta get me that CD." And I'm like, "Well, dude, can I just Dropbox it to you right now?" He's like, "Sure." It's like, so they want you to make all these. I mean, maybe
right.
maybe all these people are in cahoots with the CD makers.
That could be.
maybe they're getting a kickback.
They're getting kickbacks. I mean, they're making you jump through the hoops for some unknown reason. Well, yeah, man, I'll put on headphones. I feel like since you got them, or no, is it one or the other?
Do you feel good?
Huh?
Do you feel fine?
I feel good.
Oh yeah, you sound
okay.
great.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah.
Good.
It kind of I feel like it makes the guest less self-conscious in a way. Like they're just hanging out.
Right on. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'll feel self-conscious anyway, but I've got a ukulele almost exactly like that one.
Oh yeah, the Lanikai?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
World famous Lanikai?
Yep. That's the one, man. That is the one.
Do you have any weird guitars? Like, do you have like that box teardrop guitar?
No. No.
I've never known a person that had one of those.
I don't think I have either.
Never seen one in real life.
Yeah.
Just in MTV.
It's kind of like Sasquatch or something.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Yeah. Know. Yeah, I know. No, I don't have any really super weird guitars, I don't think. I mean, I've got my Rickenbacker 12, which yeah. is kind of unique. And it's actually a Tom Petty signature.
Oh, is it?
I think they only put out like 1,000 of those things. And of course, it had the pick guard with Tom's, you know, signature on it and all that shit, which is super cool. But it was gold. And the headstock had the gold. So I took the pick guard off of it. Mm-hmm. And like, I'll preserve that. And I put, like, I found something that sold like vintage looking kind of white. So it looks it looks
like
more
the actual,
the iconic actual, like the Damn the Torpedoes cover,
yeah.
which is, that happens to be Mike Campbell's guitar. Now it's not actually, it wasn't Tom's guitar, but I guess they thought, well, it looks good posing with it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but that's kind of the most unique guitar I have, I think.
Yeah.
I treasure that guitar, man. I like wipe it down after every show.
Really?
Like, don't scratch this motherfucker.
are Rickenbackers fragile? I've never owned one of those. I've used them before, but I the neck is too small for me.
Yeah, it's well,
and it sounds like I've used it for stuff when I needed something that sounded exactly right. like a Rickenbacker, but I couldn't see myself actually playing one.
Right. Yeah, it's tricky playing it, actually. They don't seem, I mean, they seem like they're really well built. Like, they're, you know, it's like a really well built guitar, but at the same time, it seems like it would be fragile because it's so light. It's so light. Yeah, the neck's not super, like.
Tom Petty also doesn't seem like he'd put his name on something that wasn't good. Like, you know those Keith Urban guitars that they have at Target? have you seen those?
I have.
Learn to play guitar with Keith Urban. It's great.
Right.
Mate?
I can't see Tom doing that. You no. can't see like a Tom Petty signature at Walmart, you know?
You haven't been in a hotel room late at night and seen the Keith Urban, like, get this guitar, like, infomercial?
I have seen it. I think I've seen infomercials with him, but I didn't realize.
That's what he's pushing, man.
Okay.
I mean, maybe that's what he was pushing last time I saw him.
Yeah, it could be. I thought it was like some kind of like, you know, learn how to play guitar in three easy, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that easy. Like, he knows that.
Yeah, exactly.
I know, it's easy, mate. I don't know why I feel compelled to imitate him.
But I dig it.
He's so laid back.
He seems laid back.
Yeah, I met him.
Oh, did
I
you
met
really?
Him before he was Keith Urban. He was a dude in a band called The Ranch, and we had
cool,
the same
man.
Management.
Cool.
And I went to their show, and we hung out. He was real nice.
That's awesome.
Trish and Darren were there that night.
That's
there's
awesome.
A picture.
Man, I think he's a cool dude. I don't like his music at all. Sorry, Keith, if you're listening.
No, he's a huge fan of the show.
But yes, I'm sure. But but he can play guitar, and and I always loved his hair. You know, so
good hair.
Back before I had to have the Tom hair, I used to like that was my go to. You know,
how does let's get into that?
Okay.
Well, wait, first, let's acknowledge that you're wearing a Flipnautics 1992 to 2014 shirt.
Yes.
I used to play there a lot. Did you play there a lot?
Not a lot. I played there a handful of times with various people.
Okay.
But not a lot. I wouldn't say a lot, but I hung out there a lot.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I hung out there as much as I could. You know, and I'd go get my latte and I'd sit there and just watch the people come and go and kind of read the Chronicle and shit.
That was it was kind of a place like there was a couple coffee shops like that, like Quackenbush's on 43rd is like that. And Flipnautics was like that, where like you can kind of make a day of, you know, dude shows up. Oh, hey, man, how you doing? Oh, what's going on? Your bros show up and you get a table with like a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, exactly.
No one has jobs.
Right, no, exactly. I would just see the most random people, there. Just it was a cool thing. Who was the? Oh God, it was some celebrity chick that I saw there one. Minnie Driver.
Oh yeah.
One day she was like, I said, no, there's Minnie Driver sitting there on the back deck at Flipnautics. I'm like, what the hell's that about?
Do you remember in the late '90s and early 2000s when that lady was bringing that monkey there every morning?
Oh, now
that
God.
Fucking monkey on a leash. He was an asshole, dude. Like, it was like the jerkiest monkey you ever met.
Yeah.
Worthless. Okay, so Ty, where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Northeast Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's
Canton to be specific.
Okay. Yeah. Canton, Ohio.
Home of the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's why I know that name.
Yeah.
Were you a football guy growing up? Were you?
Actually, I was. You know, like, I still am. Yeah. Pro football, because that's the home of pro football.
Sure, sure.
You know, like I kind of like college football, but not all that much. But pro football was kind of because I used to live just down the street from the Hall of Fame, so I would walk down there. Me and my buddies would go down there, and this is way back before the fantasy football thing. And we had our own fantasy football. We would take little index cards and do research on like Bronco Nagurski and, you know, like Sammy Baugh, and like, all these people, like all these like old timer, you know, and we would make these fantasy football teams out of these Hall
generations
of, fame.
Of exactly.
But yeah, going back generations and generations, and Jim Thorpe, you know, of course, Jim Thorpe, he played for the Canton Bulldogs like 1920, you know,
so
he would be on my team So that kind of, it kind of fostered my interest in football and pro football and kind of carried with me to this day.
Did you have brothers and sisters? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah. I got, I do. I have brothers and sisters, brother and sister, half sisters, half brothers, that kind of thing. I've got brother and sister, like stayed up in Ohio, but I've got my brother moved out to LA and a sister out in North Carolina, another sister who was in Oregon. And then she came to Austin for a while, lived here for a while. Now she's out in San Diego. So, but yeah, siblings all over the joint.
When did you find music? Like, how did that happen? Like, did you have older siblings that you go listen to their records when they were doing stuff?
No, actually, I'm the oldest.
Oh, you are?
I'm the oldest kid, you know, in the family. And so I was kind of the one that was like, you know, they came and, I don't know. Like, I think I came up in the, it's just hard to get around all this stuff without giving away my age. But, you know, I came up in the, you know, I remember Zeppelin and like the early like 70s stuff, like because we had babysitters that would just come over when my mom was going to work or going to school or whatever. And she was a very young woman at the time. But then the babysitters would come over and like, you know, put on the Zeppelin record or whatever. And so that just, I don't know, that just permeated my brain. And then as I got further on into my teens, I just gravitated to it, you know?
Yeah.
And,
did you start with guitar or did you have a band in like in high school junior high or something?
Well, you know, I started with guitar. So this is a funny, okay, so I can go down all kinds of crazy rabbit holes, but my aunt, a woman married to my uncle, her sister's husband was a drummer who played in this band in Northeast Ohio called La Flavor. They were a disco band back in the day, and they put out a single called Mandalay, and Mandalay got spun on Dick Clark's American Bandstand, like Raider record or whatever that thing was.
Wow.
Yeah. And so just the fact that I sort of had this like a couple degrees of separation from this dude and kind of like knew, like the family knew him and would go see them play, that it kind of blew my mind that I, as a young kid, I was like, wow, I know a dude that got a record, you know, got spun on American Bandstand. And that just like my mind exploded and I wanted to like play music then.
Yeah.
You know, and then a buddy of mine, he went out and got a gold top Les Paul. And I was like, that is the guitar I have to have. I have to have. To this day, I do not have a gold top Les Paul.
Oh, man.
But fans. I did get in like late 70s a Silver Sunburst Les Paul.
Oh, that's nice.
So that was my compromise, you know.
Silver Sunburst?
Silver Sunburst, man. I still have it. It's badass.
Okay.
Custom Les Paul, which I don't ever play. But it's an amazing guitar, so probably never get rid of that thing.
Good, don't.
Yeah, I won't. I won't.
So what was your first, like, band? What did you do? Did you start a band or did you join a band?
I kind of joined a band. I started playing this, so a buddy of mine lived up the street, you know, and he played drums, I think, and he invited me over. It's like, hey, man, why don't you bring your guitar? And I still remember to this day the very first song I ever played in that basement with them was Gimme Three Steps by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
I mean, how I remember that, I have no idea.
Did you know like the
there was another guitar player dude who I can't remember who, you know, he kind of showed me. Okay. You know, he's like, yeah, he goes this I was like, okay, cool. So yeah, that was like my first. And then I would just go back over, you know, after school, you know, go over there and play just whatever was happening back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of where it started. And then I fell in with some other people that were starting a cover band. And that was my first experience playing out in clubs.
How was that? How old were you?
I was like 21 years old, uh-huh. You know. Super young, and but also my first experience singing. So it was like this band. We had a chick singer, lead singer, but then the bass player sang lead on some of it, and then I got to sing lead on some of it. So we sort of split up the lead vocal, kind of like what Skyrocket does, you know.
Yeah.
And we split up the lead vocal duties, and I got to sing like, you know, Prince, and Rick Springfield, you know.
So it was early 80s?
Yeah.
It was Prince like what? Like
it was 84.
Oh, okay.
So right when Purple Rain came out.
Oh, yeah.
And we were covering that stuff like as it came out, you know, and yeah. So.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really cool, man. It was a cool experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was sort of the beginning of the end, you know?
Yeah.
And did that for a couple, I don't know, for a while. And then that band fizzled and kind of stopped playing music for a long time.
What'd you do?
Yeah. Well, I decided, I better go to college and, you know, get a degree and do something sensible.
What was that?
Accounting.
Yeah, that's sensible.
Yeah, it's super sensible. You know.
How'd you do? You get your degree?
I did.
Yeah.
Well, it took me a little bit. It took me longer than the 4 years. I won't say how long.
You don't have to.
But it took me, you know, it took me a bit, but I finished. You know, I finished. And I don't quit things. So.
That's good.
I mean, that's an attribute I guess I have. I don't
know. You put music on hold. What were you doing? Like, what was your relationship to music during that time when you were going? Did you pull the Les Paul out?
I did.
Rock out. Did you have dudes you got together with and like in a garage or something, just kind of do something?
You know, after that first cover band broke up, I kind of tried to like, I tried to roll that into something.
Yeah.
And I tried to start a band with the kid that was a drummer for the band, and it just didn't work and whatever. So then I stopped playing, and I would just get out the Les Paul and like listen to stuff on the radio and try to learn it as it came over the radio, which is kind of developed my ear, you know. So
how long do you stay up? Did you stay up?
Oh God, like a long time. It must have been
probably. So you were in Parade?
No. Well, no. I stayed out until I moved to Austin.
Okay, when did you move to Austin?
93.
Why?
Well, mostly because of music.
Yeah.
Because there was like a thing in me that went like, I need to do music again. Like, I need to play music again. Like, I quit, and it had been like maybe 7-8 years or something like that. It'd been a while. And I was like, man, I really, really, really want to play music. And I've been hearing about this Austin, Texas place. Like, I hear this is like a music scene down there. My buddy had a good, my best friend, we've been buddies since back in the Ohio days. And you know, shout out to Don DeKay. But, he was like, man, he'd been living down here for a little bit. And he's like, man, you need to get down here, man. You need to get to Austin and play. And I was like, okay, I'm coming. He sent me a signed, he used to hang at Pearl's Oyster Bar.
Yeah, yeah. I used to play there.
So I was, yeah, I never got to play Pearl's. I actually worked at Pearl's for a short moment.
Like that you said, I never got to play Pearl's.
You
never got to play a restaurant.
I know.
But it was it's like the coolest restaurant gig you could play.
It was actually the first place when I got here that I saw live music.
Okay.
So
he sent you a signed what?
He sent me a signed menu. Charlie and Will Sexton both autographed that menu. And I know I've got it somewhere up in my attic somewhere still to this day, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, because I knew Charlie. I knew who Charlie was.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when I was in my cover band and, you know, Beat So Lonely came out and all that stuff. Man, I was like, all right.
Yeah.
You know? So I was digging on that. Yeah. I was really digging on that. But anyway, he sent me that autographed menu, and they sent me like a mixtape of Texas music and stuff. And
well, what all was on there? Like Archangels?
There was some Archangels.
Archangels.
There was some like Lyle Lovett. There was some ZZ Top. You know what all was on there, man? Just like a lot of stuff. It was all cool. And I just listened. I drove down here, and it was a cassette. And I just.
Oh, that's cool. Warming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I wore the thing out like all the way down here, and man, I wish I could remember. Something I probably still possess because I don't throw things away either.
Yeah.
I probably have that somewhere I have to find. But yeah, that was really cool. So yeah, I got down to Austin and
started working at Pearl's?
I started trying to find work right away. So I just, wait tables and bartend. And of course I had buddies at Pearl's or connections over there. So I did work at Pearl's for like a minute. Didn't enjoy working at Pearl's, I have to say. But I got to see, I think it was Bugs Henderson.
Oh yeah.
Was the first music I saw in Austin at Pearl's Oyster Bar.
Yeah.
And then I remember seeing Guy Forsythe and
just
a bunch of people. Oh, and then I saw the Radio Thieves. Do you know the Radio Thieves?
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think they were on our residency, at least for 1 month they opened for us every Thursday.
Okay.
At least.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember I made the posters.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So that was kind of like, because I ended up, their lead singer's named Kevin Sakani.
Yeah.
And I ended up knowing Kevin and meeting him and kind of collaborating with him. And that's what kind of led to Parade.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I hung out with them during that time, that 93.
Oh, yeah.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like summer of 93 they opened. I know I've seen even still like Mr. Rocket Baby with Radio Thieves.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know they did a show at Pearl's dressed as Kiss in drag.
That's cool.
Well, in drag. So they had the Kiss makeup, but like dresses on.
That's pretty cool.
That's something Kevin would do. I don't know. Yeah.
So you guys became friends and then Radio Thieves broke up.
Right, right, right.
And then you guys started Parade.
I know Radio Thieves broke up and then he started another band called 2 Minute Sinatra. And
Yeah.
He did that for a while, 2 Minute Sinatra. And I think 2 Minute Sinatra broke up. And then right as 2 Minute Sinatra was breaking, which, you know, Kevin and I kind of met at like a house party or something, you know, and an acoustic guitar got out and I started playing some Bowie on acoustic, and he like immediately like came over and was like, "Oh my God, you're playing Bowie, right?" And so, and yeah, we just like he's like, "Man, we should get together and like try to bang out some tunes or whatever." And that's what we started doing. And well before it became Parade, it was just like it was kind of like the Kevin Sakani project. And I think we call it like Sakani, you know. And we were playing it like the Lucky Lounge and places like that.
Yeah, yeah.
For a while. Well before that. But then we had these songs. It's like, well, we need to do an album, man. But I was like, we should really be a band. we need to be a band, because it was like,
who else did you get? I can't read.
Well, so we, like, I don't know if you can see from the thing, but that tall dude in the back there, that's Brian Mendes.
Okay.
You know Brian?
Love Brian.
Yeah, Brian Mendes on drums. And he introduced me to this dude named Gino Stroya.
Yep.
And he's like, Gino is going to be in the band. He's going to be our bass player. He doesn't know how to play bass, but he's going to be our bass, because Gino was a guitar player.
Isn't it weird that why is it always like the bass that's like the thing that like, oh, my sister, well, she's cool looking. Let's just, you know, like right. Even Jellyfish, like their first thing, they're like, the dude played bass on the record. Then they're like, well, we'll just get my brother. We'll teach him how to play bass.
Yeah, it was kind of like that.
It's real hard. It's not like it's easy.
I know.
Yeah.
But somehow you get it in your brain that it's maybe like...
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
But no, it's like, okay, Gino's going to, you know. So, you know, he came into the band, and as it turns out, you know, like I said, I'm from Northeast Ohio, and it turns out Gino is too. And so we meet down here in Austin, and he's from this place called Alliance, Ohio, which is like 20 minutes down the street. We went to the same college.
Yeah.
We went to like, you know, like everything. Like literally, like we know we have the same frame of reference on everything growing up. It's crazy. But we met here in Austin, Texas. But he was the bass player, Brian Mendes, and then Stuart Cochran.
Oh, yeah, Stuart.
You know, who played in 54 Seconds.
Right.
We kind of...
co-opted him.
Yeah, we did a little bit. You know, we recruited him to be our... So when we, you know, I guess I can't remember if that was before we went in the studio or after we went in with Spencer, but Stuart. So Stuart would play keyboards for us and a couple other guys, but mostly Stuart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done that. I produced a record for a band and just like got the whole band to be my band.
Yeah. That's kind of what Petty did, right? Like, you know, when he went out, he went out to California and he basically recruited those guys. They kind of went out together as Mud Crutch and then the whole thing fell apart.
Right, right.
And then I think it was Ben Mont was trying to start his own thing. And so he, you know, he got Stan and like Mike or whatever. And then they were like, well, hey, Tom, why don't you come over and play some harp on something or whatever? And then Tom was like, hey, you guys need to be my band.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of, kind of like... how that stuff works sometimes.
You know, I've hung with him a few times, and that's the part of the story that always seems real weird to me, that, like, he's such a... I didn't know him. I mean, when I met him, he was already sober. He was already, like, an older dude. Doesn't seem like a guy that's like, yeah, I got this deal, man. You guys all... You know what I mean?
Right,
he's
right.
always, like, kind of like that was a very odd part of the story to me. Anyway,
it is, but I think he knew like he was going to be a star, so he was going to do it, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress.
Do you ever listen to his solo album? Did you listen to that when it came out a couple years ago?
Oh, a little bit. Yeah, I think I heard a couple things off of it. It sounded pretty cool.
Do you know Kimmy Rhodes?
I don't.
Oh, she's great. She's a country artist here, but I was stoked because I did a record with her. And we wrote some songs together, and we did a song as a duet. And then she does it, like she did a record with Willie of duets, like when was coming up and stuff. Yeah. And so she's done duets with all these awesome people. And the one before me, the one that I love even more than any Willie thing, was that she did a duet with Ben Mont on her record before the one that I got to do with.
Nice.
It was pretty cool. So the parade thing goes, you guys make the record, you played. I lived next door to Spencer during that time.
Yeah,
was that 98, 99, 2000?
Yeah, I think we talked about this the other day.
Yeah,
we actually met back then.
Yeah.
Because I was hanging out at Spencer's house all the time.
Yeah, me too.
We were recording that in Stuart's house, I believe. He had a little studio in his home.
Right, right.
Yeah.
When they first had the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where we recorded that thing. And but we'd go over to Spencer's for whatever. And there was one like late night and everybody was drinking or whatever. And I think we came over, or you came over to Spencer's, I don't know, but
there was a lot of back and forth drinking late nights back then.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah.
There was.
So that band broke up just like
You know,
what's Kevin doing now? Every once in a while I
think
see
that thing kind of fizzled, you know, unfortunately, like we threw so much into that man and it just like we couldn't get, you know, I couldn't get any attention from like even radio stations in town or whatever. It was kind of a bummer. And then so that sort of fizzled. And then Kevin wanted to take the thing and in a more Americana direction, you know, like,
right.
Yeah.
I remember sort of his thing afterwards was like a little more.
Yeah. American. Yeah.
Were and, you in that?
Cajun stuff. Well, I did a little bit of that with him. Yeah. I did a little bit of that with him. We recorded some stuff out at Mark Addison's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we recorded actually two records out there. And we did some really cool stuff. And it was some of those songs were kind of recycled, songs. That he did, you know, did it more in that style,
like parade songs.
Yeah, songs that were parade. Well, the one song, Burial Ground, it's seen many lifetimes. So it was kind of like, you know, I think he did it in Radio Thieves, and we did it in Parade, and then he did it sort of like more Americana, whatever. But then he had a bunch of new material that he recorded out there. And then finally, I think he ended up moving back to Lafayette. He's okay, originally from Lafayette, Louisiana. Yeah, so he's still back there.
So man, let's figure out the damn torpedoes thing.
Yeah.
How did that even come to how does?
Yeah, it's strange. Well, you know, so after the whole experience with like Parade and all that, and just kind of throwing like. Financially, you know, I threw my money at it, my heart, my soul, everything at it, and then just feeling sort of defeated or deflated.
That's rock and roll.
That's rock and roll, right? Right.
Welcome to the music business.
You know, it's funny because I've always kind of, sort of wanted to talk to you and Darren and y'all about this because, I mean, y'all played a major role. Like, I feel like Skyrocket played a major role because, like, you know, coming out of that period where I was sort of like doing, like trying to do something original, because that's what I felt like when I got here to Austin. I mean, like Austin's an original music town.
Yeah.
Like everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like a fan of all, you know, of this music and just going out to hear live music all the time in the 90s and just loving it. But at that point, I was just like, man, you know, we threw so much into this and like I can't get noticed. Right. And then I went out and saw K-Tel and the Hit Machine, you know, and I was like, man, and I loved you guys and I respected you all, you know, like, man, what? Look at these amazing musicians. And they're out there, you know, they put a band together and they're like covering tunes. And like, so it's nothing I should be like, I should feel like ashamed about doing. Like, I mean, if people like this, who I have like the utmost respect for, are doing it,
right,
why can't I do it?
Yeah, because there was that time like in the 90s where it was like,
yeah,
you'd walk by Maggie Mays and be like, fuck you, man. Exactly. I'm not going to fucking be that dude.
Right, exactly.
And I'm feeling like, no.
Never. No. Never. Yeah. I'll never do that. But it's like, seriously, like, I saw y'all doing it, and I was like, man, if those guys can do it, and I think, you know, I was a fan. I was a fan of all y'all, and going out to hear, I heard, you know, I would go out to hear Mr. Rocket Baby, and, you know, Trish and Darren and, you know, all that. And I was like, if they can do it, then why can't I do something? And so I just started thinking like, well, what would I do? You know, what would be my niche? You know, what's, you know, and that kind of like that petty thing kind of was rolling. I was sort of rolling around in the back of my brain for a while. And I just said, hey, I'll try this, you know, Tom Petty. I'll do a tribute to Tom Petty.
Yeah.
I didn't really know if I could do it, honestly. But I was just like, well, fuck it, I'll give it a shot and see what happens. The kid I was playing with Kevin for after Parade, he brought this guy back in, Tim Vaughn, who he used to play with back in the Radio Thieves days. He brought him, you know, they reconnected. Tim got back to Austin from Seattle, and so we were playing, and I was like, I would listen to Tim play. I go, man, that dude can play. He can just like, he can hear something and play it, right? I mean, he's really like, he's just one of those guys. And I knew like, okay, he's going to be able to cop all that Mike Campbell stuff. I just know that. So that's like a huge, huge piece of it. So if he can do that, and if I can somehow be a reasonable facsimile of Tom vocally and whatever.
What year was this?
So God, this was like late 2000s.
Okay.
We're in our 10th year now.
Okay,
like
okay.
We just had our 9th anniversary.
Okay.
So, you know, this was like 2008 probably, you know, yeah. getting so whatever. So yeah, I got Tim in, and then I was like, well, Gino Stroia played bass in Parade, even though he had to learn how to play bass to do that. He can play bass in this. Yeah. And so, you know, I got those two guys together, and then it just, you know, one thing led to another and kind of started coming together, you know, but.
Yet it must, there's very few people that you, I mean, if you're going to go and do something like that, you got to really like that music, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we remember when we did those ELO shows?
Yes.
Skyrocketed?
Yes.
Or K-Tel Hit Machine? I haven't listened to ELO again.
I just saw ELO live,
I used to love them, and yeah. They'll come on, I don't turn it off, but I don't go like,
right.
Ah, it's time for a little ELO today. I'm just like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. Well, honestly, man.
But you got to find something you could do all the time.
Yeah, well, true, man. And I still love Petty. And
yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It can't just be a band that you really like or you think you just love. It has to be a band that you fucking like.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing with him is like there's...
It doesn't end, man. I mean, his catalog is like ridiculous. And we're like something on the order of 70 of his songs right now that we could pull out when Free Fallin' comes on the radio, I'm not like jonesing to listen to that,
right?
You know, at all.
Right.
But doesn't mean I don't like the song. It's just like but when we play, I like playing like the deep cuts and the random stuff that most people, a lot of people probably don't even know.
Yeah. You know, in that band Liars and Saints I had, we used to cover Thing About You.
Oh, yeah.
I love that song.
That's a great song.
There's so many of those songs that are in there. You're like, this is like a smash hit song, by the way.
Well, it's nuts because I hear songs like that. And that was one that Darren was like, oh, you guys know Thing About You? And like,
oh, I did?
Yeah. And I was like, damn, we don't know that one yet.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I'll hear a song like that. And it'll go on my to-do list because I'm like, oh, yeah, we got to learn that eventually.
Yeah.
Got to.
Yeah.
So we will someday.
We were sound checking. I guess we played at Pix and he like left his drums there or whatever.
Yeah.
And set him up and he did the sound check for his electric machine. Whatever that pad thing is.
Right.
I sounded 50 right then. The electric machine with the padding. It was the Don't You Come Around Here No More sample.
We played Pix like a week or so ago, whenever it was, and he was like, yeah, I get to leave my drums and playing here with Skyrocket. I was like, man, that's cool.
Yeah. That's an interesting place.
It is interesting. And it's kind of strange that they have this like tribute band Wednesday thing.
Oh, is that what that is?
It's really odd. It's like, okay, we'll go play Wednesday nights in San Antonio. And that's, I think we've done at least four or five maybe even. I don't know.
Really? Have you ever seen, there's a band in Dallas. I don't know what they're called, but they're a really good Tom Petty band.
Oh, Petty Theft.
I think so. They also look like retired dudes. They don't really try to
right,
like,
right.
And like the shorts and like flip flops and like
they're kind of like your dad
but they do it real well.
Yeah, they do. They do a good job. But I know that I think the singer guy is a radio DJ or something up there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's funny because like when I started the Torpedoes, like that name Petty Theft, it's like that would be a cool icon, you know. The point. And somebody's like, no, man, no,
there's already a band.
Yeah, not only that, but just like. In hindsight, I'm glad I didn't go with that name, but the damn Torpedoes is just cooler.
Yeah. You know? It's funny, when I first became aware of like tribute bands they're super popular in Britain. And like, you know how like in the back of Q and Mojo, they have like advertisements for bands and their tours.
Yeah.
And they all have like amazing names. Yours is a fucking great name, by the way. It's way better than Petty Theft. The Damn Torpedoes, that's awesome. You took their most classic album and turned it into a different thing by just moving the...
By flipping. But I can't tell you how much difficulty that has caused us, because one of my hugest pet peeves is people still call us, and they'll even introduce us on stage as Damn the Torpedoes. And like my head once like explodes, and I'm just like, oh my God. You know.
One of the reasons we changed our name from K-Tel Hit Machine was you even did it. K-Tel and the Hit Machine. People would say that. It's not... That was the name. The K-Tail Hit Machine was the name of the album that we named ourselves, or that they named it after.
Oh, man. Well, my bad. I'm sorry.
No bad. That's just normal. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
I'm sure it's hard. You got to train your mind to say the damn torpedoes.
I think you probably do. And so I can't tell you how many people mess that up. So I go to great pains to point that out. But there's actually, I think there's more. There's several, actually. But there's Tom Petty tribute bands around the country that are Damn the Torpedoes.
Oh, really?
And there's one up in New Jersey that we get mixed confused for all the time. People will like do stuff on our Instagram and like they think we're them.
Yeah.
And it's we're constantly being confused for these guys, which I don't, you know.
Yeah. Well, you guys are fucking great.
Well,
like you really are. And you're really awesome.
Well, thank you, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
You're the best one I've ever seen. I saw him a lot of times. You see him?
Oh, a bunch. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I saw him a bunch. And in fact, of course, my concert going experience goes so far back that sometimes I can't remember if I saw somebody or I didn't. But I think, so I'm fairly certain I saw him in the early 80s. But I do remember seeing him in like, I want to say the late 80s, up in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And Chris Whitley opened for him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that was the first time I'd ever been, exposed to Chris Whitley. And they were handing out cassette tapes at the end of the show.
It's like singles?
Singles. That was like, it was like snippets of his... Living with the Law. God, what is the name of the record?
I never went through a Chris Whitley. I had a lot of friends that did, man. They were like, a lot of people had like a Jeff Buckley and Chris Whitley together thing.
Right. Well, that's kind of was my introduction to him, and I totally dug it. But that's maybe the first time I remember seeing Petty for sure, for certain. And then saw him numerous times in Austin. Saw him at ACL, you know, saw him at the Bass Concert Hall, And then those last years, like he'd come out every couple of years. I went every year, every time.
The last time I saw him was 2012. Yeah. But I saw him a few times. I saw him in the 80s, I saw two of the Dylan and the Heartbreakers shows.
Yeah.
One in Florida and then one in Houston, which was pretty cool.
I missed those. That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were real cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved them. I remember it seemed, because I had seen Bob Dylan a lot because my mom was a big fan. I'd grown up like going to see Bob Dylan even like against my will.
Yeah.
Because he's not your favorite when you're like nine.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's lame ass shit. Plus he was in his Jesus thing when I was nine. Oh, so it was just what are you doing? This is
yes.
Like, if Bob Dylan could be worse for a nine-year-old, it's this.
Yes.
But he seemed, it was real fun. And then I saw him on the end of the Great Wide Open here at the Irwin Center.
Okay.
When he had the big tree and he did the chasing the guy around Nixon with the peace sign thing.
Yes, yes.
And then at the Hollywood Bowl, I saw them in like 1999. That was real cool. That was kind of the end towards the end of Howie.
Oh, right.
Because I didn't meet him, but I saw him in the backstage area, and he looked real bad.
Oh, yeah.
Like real bad. And then in 2012, I saw them. I got to meet Ron Blair and Steve Ferroni.
Oh, really?
Yep. I was with Davy Garza and Ian McLaughlin, and I mean, you know, may rest in peace. He was a great guy, but also a great guy to be with in those situations
because
everyone wants to come over and talk to him.
Because everyone knows Ian, right?
Yeah.
Oh man, how cool is that?
Yeah. A lot of lost dudes in that. Wow, didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it's true.
What do you think about this new Fleetwood Mac thing that's happening?
Oh, with Mike, you know, I haven't spent a lot of time listening and watching any videos or anything, but I'm sure.
Did you see that Ellen thing?
Oh, I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't it seem like he was just in another, he was just kind of in his own little, he's like playing a keyboard and like, just kind of like.
Yeah, a little bit.
In his own little world.
Yeah, well, a little bit. Yeah. He probably feels a little bit out of place, you know, but probably not so much any.
Do you follow him on Instagram?
I just started.
He's doing those backstage bathroom.
Those bathroom things? Yeah, those are cool, man.
Yeah, he's cool as shit.
And he's playing all this Hendrix and stuff. Yeah. And
yeah.
What a great guitar player.
Do you guys do stuff from Mojo?
Yeah, we do. One song. Well, we haven't played it all year. Part of the deal with, like, now we kind of have these substitute drummer, substitute keyboard player. It's hard to rotate some of these songs in when you have substitute guys. But there's a song called I Should Have Known It.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I know that song. Yeah.
You know that one? It's a real, it's like one of the more rocking songs on that record. And we do that one.
I love that record, man.
It's a great record.
It is really good.
Very, pretty different from most of, you know, from most of the stuff he's done over his career, but like very, you know, I'm very bluesy, very sort of like, you know, a lot of Zeppelin, a lot of like some stuff. I seem like hearing some Allman Brothers or whatever in there.
It felt like he went back to a more reckless kind of like, kind of like guy.
Yeah. Because
it seems like in the 90s, he was a little more.
Sure,
like
the
guy with his Highway Companion and stuff like that, which is all brilliant and beautiful, but it was nice to go like, oh, yeah.
Well, I think, you know.
Getting loud again.
Yeah, exactly. He went through that period where everything is very well crafted, and, you know, especially that stuff with like Jeff Lynne and everything, just, you know, putting it together that way, the way Jeff Lynne did. But like when he went and did Mojo, it's just way more just like live in the studio kind of. Yeah. It is a great record. I think it's sadly overlooked.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think it just kind of like it came out in the time of already social media and stuff, and
right
record cycles are no longer like a year, they're like 7 days.
Yeah, so, you know. I know, man, it's sad.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
It really is weird.
It's real weird. Do you guys do Jammin' Me?
We do, yeah,
that's a great song, too. Yeah, that's from an album that people didn't like.
True,
don't people not like that album? I liked it a lot when it came out. I don't really listen to it very much anymore, but
well, that was the record where they were having some real issues. You know, I think that might have been right after they came off the Dylan tour, right?
Yeah, because him and Dylan wrote that song.
They wrote that song together. But you hear that song and you're like, "Where is Dylan in this song?" You know, but I guess it's
just like some weird pop. It's one of those. It's like a We Didn't Start the Fire or It's the End of the World. You just make a list of stuff and they like you.
Yeah.
I do that sometimes. I'm in the songwriting game. You get a title and some days you're just like, well, fuck, what the hell's going on? You know.
Well, you know.
Nixon, Kennedy.
Sure. And he threw in all those names about, you know, Take Back Eddie Murphy, Take Back Joe Piscopo and all this stuff. And it's like, well, I think those people took exception to that, you know. As you would expect, but hey, oh, well, he's Tom Petty, so.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your favorite Tom Petty era?
Gosh, era? It's hard to say, man. Probably, like, when Damn the Torpedoes came out, I got that vinyl, and that was probably the one that sort of made me, like, you know, made me, like, a really, really big fan, was Damn the Torpedoes.
Yeah.
And up to that point, I've been hearing on rock radio, you know, Listen to Her Heart and Breakdown and American Girl, those songs. And obviously, man, I was like, man, these songs are amazing. But then Damn the Torpedoes comes out and it's just like a whole album that's really amazing. So that's, I think that was the one that that stands up there with my top vinyl, you know, of all time. And then it kind of just sort of followed him through the 80s with MTV and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was cool.
Yeah.
And I don't think it ever was like, it felt as cool as like, you know, that early 70s stuff for me. But then I kind of got a renewed like appreciation for him. And then it multiplied once I started the band. Cause it's like, oh my God, you don't even know until you really dive down into the songs.
Yeah.
Wow.
In my first band I ever had, we played cover songs. Like half of our songs were Tom Petty songs. And half the reason was because they were super awesome. Everyone liked Tom Petty. He's like a guy, he really kind of cruised through. Like you never.
Yeah.
I don't think I've met somebody who's like, oh, I can't stand him. Like what? What's not to stand?
I know, right? I've met one or two that I've heard that from, which always blows my mind.
Hopefully it's not like after one of your shows.
No, we've actually gotten, I tell you, I've had people come up and say stuff, and I'm trying to toot my own horn, but they'll be like, man, you guys made me a fan of Tom Petty. Or I didn't realize how many songs he had. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I didn't realize how many songs I liked that were his.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So we hear those kind of comments all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, the other thing was, too, was that you could play them. The fucking chords, yeah. You know.
Right. You know these chords.
Not doing some weird shit you never heard of before.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And you could do it with your guys in the garage. Uh-huh. You know, you might not have had a keyboard, you might not have had a Benmont or a real
right.
mic.
Right.
But you could kind of get something going with those songs with your band.
Yeah, and that in that basement I was telling you about, like, I need to know. That was one of the first, you know, E, D, C, yeah. You know, like, yeah. Okay, I can play these bar chords, you know, like. So yeah, you could.
That's still one of my very favorite.
Oh yeah,
songs. I mean that song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if I were a fighter, I would listen to that song before I went in the ring. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it does. It kind of it does kind of pump you up a bit.
Yeah, man,
it's a cool tune.
Yeah.
But. So yeah, many.
That's my whole era is like that. From when he first came out to. I'm gonna be honest. When I very first heard "Don't Come Around Here No More." I was into drum machines and synthesizers, don't mm-hmm. get me wrong, but I was like, you too?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Really? Like how most people
right.
a little older than me must have felt like when the Rolling Stones put out that record, this is just totally like disco beats, where they're like, come on, man, you're doing it too?
I know, it got to the best of me. Well, you know, he hooked up with Dave Stewart, yeah. And you know, Dave Stewart came in and like, oh, look, I got this weird sitar drum loop thing going on. Like, check it out. And I don't know where Tom was in his head.
Well, it's weird because it was a really odd representation because that's the only thing that sounds like that on that record.
It is an odd representation because that record's called Southern Accents.
And yeah, and it's got a guy like it's got a guy like hoeing wheat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've got Dave Stewart sitting up there with his like on a mushroom, you know. Yeah, yeah, that was odd. That was sort of like off out in left field, but I think that's where, you know, he was just in a weird place and open to whatever.
Sure. You know? I mean, it's a great song.
They should really go back and kind of like, you know, maybe not to, you know, it's a great song, it's a hit. It's one of the greatest hits, but pull it out and sort of like make that record cohesive.
Organic.
Or whatever.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
do
yeah.
A re-release or something. I don't know, but yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about this new box set that came out?
Oh, I dig it, man. We actually got, so there's a thing called Tom Petty Nation uh-huh. on Facebook, and they got like 30-something thousand members and whatever, and the label hooked up with them to do a listening party situation, so they would host listening parties all over the country. And the guy that heads that up, Keith Evland, I don't know if I'm saying Keith's last name right, but Keith contacted me and asked me if we would host one here in Austin. And I was like, yeah, man. So it was cool. So
yeah,
so we got to host this little listening party. They sent me a sampler CD from the box set. So
that's and I really
got,
cool.
Yeah, it was cool. And then they sent me these like liner notes things to read, so I get to be like a DJ and read, you know, stuff about the recording of each song or whatever, just little interesting tidbits about the songs and stuff. But it's cool, man. I mean, there's a song on there called Keep a Little Soul. Have you heard that one?
Mm-mm.
Oh, man.
Maybe. No. I think I did. I listened to it, like, when it came out on Spotify, but I was doing stuff.
Well, right before they put it out, they kind of released Keep a Little Soul.
Yeah.
And it was a song that the Heartbreakers recorded on the Long After Dark sessions, but for whatever reason, it didn't make it onto the record.
Yeah.
And then you listen to this song, and man, it is just catchy as all get out, and it's just an amazing song, and you're like, how the hell did that song not get on the record? But they released it and with a video with all this old footage of Tom and the guys, like, you know, super young.
Right.
And it's just a great song. So that kind of made the box set right there for me, man. Like, go get that just for that. But we learned that song right away. It's like, we got to play that one live.
Yeah.
You know, that's just a great, great tune. So, yeah, check that one out for sure if you get a chance because it's good stuff.
Yeah. I like You Got Lucky. You like that? It's a good song.
It's almost in every, I don't think I've ever, I may have never done a Torpedo show without playing that song. I just love that song.
Yeah, me too.
And I love the video.
Yeah.
You know?
I like this. I like that guitar thing.
man. And
I remember a guy that worked at a guitar store, Rockin' Robin in Houston. My mom would drop me off, me and my friend Chris, from we ended up starting our first band together. She would drop us off there like on Saturday when they opened, like at, you know, 10 or 11, and then come back and get us at 6. Those poor guys, man. We just drove those fucking guys nuts. And I remember us trying to figure out, dong, dong, dong. Can I see that Gretsch, please?
Like, yeah.
No.
Just, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I remember a guy from the guitar store showed me that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, our guitar player nails that, you know, all the little parts, you know, all those little mic parts, he really nails it. So, I mean, the tough part is getting that keyboard sound right.
Yeah.
That can be tricky, and we play with different keyboard players, so it's always maybe like a hair different.
I know that happens with Skyrocket, too. Though my thing, the sounds are all the same because someone just uses my rig.
Right,
play for me.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, we just always a different rig, and it's always maybe a slightly different sound, but it's always like in the ballpark, you know, good enough. So everybody does a really good job on that one.
Did I tell you that I did a video with his daughter, Adria?
No.
I did. I did a video. My band, Gaudi, we did a video that was directed. I don't think they work together anymore, but for a while, Adria Petty and Anna Gabriel, Peter Gabriel's daughter, were directing rock videos together in the early 2000s.
Cool.
Yeah. And I bought this Razor scooter. Me and my friend Einar bought Razor scooters on tour because that way you cruise around, you know? the parking lot of the hotel and just stuff, just something to do.
Yeah.
Because we were in a van and stuff. So we had these Razor scooters, and there's this photographer guy that's a friend of ours that was up there. He came at the end of the video shoot at the end of the day, and me and Einar were showing him our Razor scooters. And I fucking opened the Razor scooter. And it opened, my finger was in the chute, and it fucking, it wasn't this, it was like sliced this finger, the pad of my middle finger just off, but it was still connected, you know, up here, but it was off here. So I'm bleeding, I'm in the middle of a tour, like an indefinite tour, and I pass out.
Oh my God.
And so they've got to get me to this place. But also, this is something I didn't realize until later, because I was like, man, they're really nice, and they were really concerned. I remember a bass player going like, yeah, because we were shooting without permits, like in Peter Gabriel's house, and you cut your fucking finger off. You know what I mean? Like, they were like, oh, fuck my dad. Because there was one thing Anna did say. She said, if you ever meet my father, don't ever tell him you were here. She said that to us, and we were like, okay, that's weird. And we were like, Peter Gabriel, we were never in your house in New York. Anyway, so I remember this one thing. I don't know. I'm telling this story. It's very long, but it's just to get to this one thing that's so very, you could tell it was Tom Petty's daughter. So I pass out. This African dude, Iba, that was hanging out, like runs. He owns a food truck here now, but this is in New York. He runs me to the hospital. Like,
wow.
You would be okay, little buddy. He's like from Senegal. And then there was like the director girls, maybe one of my band guys, we're all running to the hospital. I go into the emergency room thing, but Adria comes with me, and she goes to check me in. They're like, what happened? She's like, you need to look at my friend, man. He's got a really wicked bad cut on his finger.
She sounds like Tom.
totally like that. Like, I remember laughing because I was like, I bet they're going to think that this chick is like super stoked. She's like, oh, I'm going to stay with him. Is that okay? You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then, oh my God, sorry. Then we heard weirdest conversation I've ever heard. You know, it's like you're in this emergency room in New York. There's curtains. There's not rooms, right? There's curtains. So you're hearing the guy next door, and the doctor's talking to the guy who's got something and his wife. And they're like, okay, well, we need you to sign this thing. And she's like, what's that? And he's like, well, we need him to sign this thing that if he does die during the operation, that we'll resuscitate him. And she's like, no, Irving, no, we talked about this. You said you wouldn't sign it. And I remember Adrian and I looking at each other going like, oh my God, fuck. This lady's like, look, if you die, that's it, dude.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, awkward. I digress.
Yeah.
What shows do you have coming up, say, end of November, beginning of December?
So we are playing the Empire Control Room.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, our first time ever playing there. I'm kind of stoked about that. It's going to be cool. They're calling it the Petty Party.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be really neat. November 30. I don't know if that's a Friday or Saturday night, but...
Yeah.
And then I know December 14th, we're going to play at the Saxon Pub.
Okay.
And we might, this, I'm not sure, I don't want to like commit anybody on this, but I think we're going to have like some, so our one of the dudes playing keys with us, Andy Nolte, he just put out a record, and he's got guys playing horns and strings with him. Mm-hmm. So he's also playing the show. So he's doing his solo thing, and then he's playing keys with us.
Oh, cool.
So I think, and I, you know, like I say, I don't want to commit anybody, but there's been talk that maybe we'll add some horns and strings and stuff onto some Petty songs.
Oh, that'd be cool.
It would be really cool.
Did you have that Pack Up the Plantation?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I used to have the video too. I recorded it, but was it on Showtime or HBO or something?
Oh, I can't remember, but anyway, I do remember. But we do some songs off of that, you know, like So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star, that stuff. And it's got all the trumpet stuff and
do you
all
do
that.
Needles and pins when you have the
yes
oh cool
yes yeah. We just did that for the Tom Petty birthday show over at Threadgills last week from Saturday, and we had Susanna Schoffel sitting
oh
with
really
us. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, she came in and came over and sat in with us and sang Stop Dragon, and we did Needles and Pins.
I love that song so much. You know, Sonny Bono wrote that song.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know.
So weird.
That's always one of those fun little facts, and people are always like, where did this song? Yeah, Sonny Bono wrote that tune.
Well, it's weird because I remember when the Pack Up the Plantation thing, like, I was like, fuck, man, this is like this is one of his best songs. Like, this is the shit. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe it. It's like, what record is this even from?
Yeah.
And then
I think it was like,
I think it was my dad that was like, oh, that's a hit from the 60s.
Yeah, I think it was like the Searchers, maybe, I want to say. Yeah. They had a hit with that song after Bono recorded or wrote it. I think Bono wrote it. I think he co-wrote it or something with somebody.
Yeah.
And maybe somebody else recorded it, and then this other band came and recorded, had like a hit with it. And then I don't know why Tom decided to dust that one off and him and Stevie start singing it, but it was really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun tune.
Yeah.
It's got the crazy key change in it.
Yeah.
Like you go up, I think like two full steps.
Yeah.
I've never seen a key change like that in my life. It's nuts.
Bono, not Bono. Still spelled the same. Man, this has been great hanging out.
Yeah,
talking.
Man, I've had a blast.
Yeah, it's been great. Sorry for the long-winded stories.
No.
But I thought you could take it in. Hey, you know, this is a little bit of... I never met him in all of my dealings. I did encounter his wife. She came down to get... right before the encore, she came and got Ian McLaughlin. And took him backstage to hang out before the encore. And she was wearing sunglasses. She reeked of weed. Looked just like she would. Like if someone, there was a lineup of people and they were like, hey, can you find Tom Petty's wife?
Right.
That's a lady. Be like, oh, her.
You know, that's, yeah. Was it Dana?
Yeah, whoever the most recent one was. Yeah, Dana.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never got to meet any of those guys or him, you know. So it's cool for me to talk to people who have known or met them or.
That's how I am, like with people of the Beatles and stuff. Like I meet someone and they're like, oh yeah, I know this Beatle. I met this Beatle, you know. When you talk to Jody, I did this podcast with Jody Denberg at his house. He's like, come on down to my rec room. And you go down there, you're like, fuck.
Wow.
I want a picture with me and Ringo.
Right, yeah, I know.
That's really cool.
I know.
Yeah.
I know, that would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. A lot of Yoko pictures in there. He's a Yoko guy.
Well, they're like besties, right? Or
I guess so.
Yeah.
I had to unfollow her on Twitter, man. She drives me nuts. She does. She drives me nuts.
She's got a way about her.
Yeah, she does. Well, yeah. God bless her. Ty, people can find you guys at thedamntorpedoes.com.
Yes,
You got a Facebook page.
That's correct.
Are you on Instagram?
We are on Instagram as well. Yeah. I don't know what the exact...
But if people go to the Damn Torpedoes, there you got links to all the things. They can find the shows. They can see the videos. You gave me a nice shirt.
Yes.
I actually asked for it because I saw the shirts. I was like, oh, the shirts are cool as shit.
Yeah, I'm glad we found something in there that'll work. Yeah, you can find us on there, damntorpedoes.com. The Damn Torpedoes. Not damn the. No. The Damn.
The Damn.
TheDamnTorpedoes.com and on Facebook and on Instagram and on Twitter. And yeah. We're on all that stuff. So trying to get the word out, you know?
Yeah. Are you active on social? Do you like it? You made a face like it. You're like, oh, so I'm on it, so I'm doing it.
Yeah, you know.
You happy the, now?
I'm not the hugest fan, I got to admit. But I mean, I just do it. If I weren't in a band, I probably would be, I would just not have anything to do with any of it.
Yeah.
But I am.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
And I am, and therefore, like, I'm always on that stuff. Yeah. Always. Like, and yeah. I'm always, that's what I, you know, you got to use it to push it. That's the way of the world now.
Sometimes I'm good. I moderated this panel like a year ago for the city with all these people, but about social media and how to use it. And mm-hmm. I wasn't like an expert. I was just moderating the panel, right? Right. I learned so much, and I started putting it into practice, and I started getting really good. And then it's a lot of work, man.
Oh, it's a ton of
and
work.
And then I just kind of like, I feel like it, I do it, but I'll go a whole week without posting any kind of thing other than like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Here's the latest podcast for me.
Sometimes it gets away from me and I'm like, oh crap, man. Now I haven't promoted my show enough. Yeah. Nobody's
Susanna is really good at a very natural sort of like daily sort of, you can check in with her and it's normal stuff. It's not always
right. Yeah.
I'm doing this, you know?
Yeah. And she was great. Like on her show on Sun Radio, she was giving us plugs and she's super cool.
Oh yeah. She's a great DJ. You know, she's the first guest of How Did I Get Here?
I listened to your podcast with her and I heard, I listened to that interview and I heard you say that.
Yeah. Patient zero. That's what we call it.
That's so cool, man. Yeah. Well, she's a super cool chick. It was really great to get to meet her and know her, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a great person. Dude, been great talking to you. People good out there, check out the Damn Torpedoes, thedamntorpedoes.com.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's videos on there, pictures.
Yeah, yep.
Merchandise.
Yep.
Get out to a show. It's always a great night. You sing along with everything.
It's definitely a fun time. I think people always have a good time at the show. So.
And plus, we've cross-pollinated. Not only, like, Skyrocket doesn't do shows with anyone, but we've done shows with you guys than once.
Yeah.
and Darren is on your thing. I don't think he has any plans of.
We love having Darren play with us, man.
Darren loves playing. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? I mean, that's a fucking cool gig.
And he gets to do those Stan Lynch harmonies, and it's just like, it's killer.
Yeah. Yeah, it scratches a certain place for him.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
Thanks, Ty.
Yeah, man. Thank you. To know us have so misunderstood.
She fixes her hair. Ty Herless from the Damn Torpedoes. You can find them at thedamntorpedoes.com. Great talking to that guy, man. He's such a nice guy. I've had a chance to like hang out with him at different shows, kind of like in the audience. We said, you know, hang out and talk, shoot the shit. I've seen them perform quite a few times. They did a bunch of shows with Skyrocket at the 1-to-1 bar. I know Darren's been playing with him. He's been having a great time. Get out there and see them, the Damn Torpedoes. I know they're doing a show in December at Saxon Pub. Go see them, find them at thedamntorpedoes.com. All of your Damn Torpedoes needs. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Have a great day. Whatever it is that you're doing, do it. Whatever it is that you're doing, do it, okay? Just do it. Go. Go and do it. Go. Come on. I said go do it. Let's get down. Things could be better. Things could get so much worse. Things could be better. Do I feel ashamed? Should I feel